This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The U.S. has been in contact with Israel about a strike on a school in Gaza Thursday. That's according to State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller, telling reporters, adding that Washington expects Israel to be fully transparent in making information about the strike public.
The government of Israel has said that they are going to release more information about this strike, including the names of those who died in it. We expect them to be fully transparent in making that information public.
Israel hit the Gaza school Thursday with what it described as a targeted airstrike on up to 30 Hamas fighters inside. And Hamas officials said 40 people were killed, including women and children sheltering at the UN site. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports on Spain's application to join South Africa's case at the top UN court accusing Israel of genocide.
Spain's foreign minister has announced that Spain will ask a United Nations court for permission to join South Africa's case, accusing Israel of genocide in Gaza.
España.
Speaking in Madrid, foreign minister José Manuel Álvarez made the declaration after what he said was weeks of consideration. Spain is the first European country to take this step after South Africa filed its case with the International Court of Justice in late 2023. It alleged that Israel was breaching the Genocide Convention in its military assault that has laid waste to large swaths of Gaza. Mexico, Colombia, Nicaragua, Libya and the Palestinians have already requested to join the case. I'm Karen Chamas.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is expected to address a joint meeting of Congress on July 24th. Congressional leaders confirmed the date of the address late Thursday after formally inviting Netanyahu to come speak before lawmakers last week. It is the most recent show of wartime support for the longtime ally despite mounting political divisions over the military conquest. This is VOA News. The shooting attack against Slovakia's populist prime minister last month has highlighted divisions in Central Europe, a region that's become especially polarized in the wake of Russia's large-scale invasion of Ukraine. John Spear narrates the story from Europe.
One report by the Slovak think tank GlobalSec suggests that war fatigue is to blame for decreased sympathy for the Ukrainian cause in these countries.
What has sort of been happening since 2022 is that some of the initial support is fading, but it was a very high level of support, so that's expected in some countries. For instance, in Poland, compared to 2022, less people see Ukraine's future in the EU, NATO, or both.
With support for the Ukrainian cause declining in Central Europe, Russian propaganda, observers say, is focused on undermining support for the European Union among societies in places like Romania, Slovakia and Hungary. For Ricardo Marquina, this is John Spear, VOA News.
The United Nations humanitarian chief says leaders in many conflict areas are more interested in power and political rivalries than in listening to the needs of their people, improving their lives and ending the fighting. In an interview with the Associated Press, Martin Griffiths said humanitarian workers in conflict-torn countries see the consequences of the failure every day when they often put their lives on the line to help millions of people who are hungry, displaced, and caught in violence. He's preparing to step down this month after 3 years as the Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator. He says there's no lack of political diplomacy in Gaza, but it's just not working well enough. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports on observances of the 80th anniversary of the Allied invasion against Nazi forces in France.
International leaders, including President Joe Biden, joined a few surviving veterans to mark the 80th anniversary of World War II's Allied invasion against Nazi forces. On June 6, 1944, Allied aircraft bombed German coastal defenses in France, and troops poured ashore on five codenamed beaches. The sound of reenactors Thursday at Utah Beach tracing the perilous and bloody paths ashore.
Emotional and exhilarating because of the fact that the history literally happened here.
Jason Maliari traveled to Normandy from California. Nearly 160,000 Allied troops landed in Normandy on D-Day. History's biggest amphibious assault resulted in thousands of casualties. I'm Norman Hall.
Around 400 million European Union citizens are electing members of the European Parliament in one of the biggest global democratic events. Far-right parties are seeking to gain more power amid a rise in the cost of living and farmers' discontent. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Friday, June 7th, and here are some of the stories we are following. South African President Ramaphosa outlined the ANC's roadmap for a government of national unity.
The purpose of the government of national unity must be first and foremost be to tackle the pressing issues that South Africans want to be addressed.
Somalia is elected to the UN Security Council. Malawi's president rejects a law to legalize cannabis. The UN says that millions of people die each year from foodborne diseases. And Ugandan President Museveni vows to fight corruption.
People, even in my office, take bribes from people to bring people to see me. Can you imagine?
And we'll tell you why the UNDP is installing solar panels on government-owned health facilities in Zimbabwe. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says the ruling African National Congress, the ANC, accepts the outcome of the May 29th presidential and provincial elections and the frustrations and aspirations of South Africans. Speaking late Thursday night at the conclusion of the ANC National Executive Council meeting, President Ramaphosa said that what the ANC needs to do is to set up a government of national unity, one that advances the interests of all South Africans.
The ANC acknowledges that we are at a moment of fundamental consequence in the life of our nation. Our country requires extraordinary leadership and courage to plot a way forward. We must act with speed to safeguard national unity, peace, stability, inclusive economic growth, non-racialism, and non-sexism. We will ensure the continuation of a progressive agenda of social and economic transformation in our country. We have therefore agreed that we will invite political parties to form a government of national unity as the best option to move our country forward. The modalities of the government of national unity will take into account the conditions prevailing at this moment in our country's history. The purpose of a government of national unity must be first and foremost be to tackle the pressing issues that South Africans want to be addressed. These issues include job creation and the growth of our economy that will be inclusive, the high cost of living, service delivery, crime and corruption. The NEC has agreed that this moment calls for the broadest unity of the people of South Africa. This moment also calls for multi-party cooperation and multi-stakeholder collaboration if we are to overcome the severe challenges that confront our country. In establishing a government of national unity, we would be building on a very rich history of cooperation across divides of politics and ideology. We will be drawing on an experience with which South Africans are familiar and which served our country well at a time of great difficulty and division. 30 years after the achievement of democracy in 1994, we are, as the people of South Africa, once again called upon to ensure that we collaborate and that political parties should come together to forge a common future for our country. But it is not only political parties that need to come together. We believe that there is a need for a national dialogue which brings together all parties, all social partners, and all sections of society to seek consensus on the actions required to take the country forward.
That was South African President Cyril Ramaphosa speaking late Thursday at the conclusion of the African National Congress ANC National Executive Council meeting. The audio is courtesy of the ANC media. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has decried rampant corruption, and he says he is now ready to crush it. Museveni says fraud, mismanagement, and malfeasance stems from public officials, including those close to him at the State House and members of parliament. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakariji has more from Kampala.
In his State of the Nation address this Thursday, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni says he was surprised when he learned about the extent of corruption.
People, even in my office, take bribes from people to bring people to see me. Can you imagine?
He said an officer working at the presidency was recently appeared in court for soliciting bribes from investors who wanted to meet with him. The president's comments follow a corruption scandal that recently rocked the parliament, in which some parliamentary officials, including the speaker, were involved in a cash bonanza worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. Museveni said he has credible information that the vice is widespread among public officials.
I have been hearing that from Ministry of Finance, they arranged with the accounting officers of ministries to come to parliament, working with some people there, to provide certain funds, provided you take a share. I didn't believe this, but now I have proof.
Goreth Namuga is the deputy chairperson of the Public Accounts Committee at the parliament. Namuga, who is a member of Uganda's leading opposition party, the National Unity Platform, says he was not moved by the president's speech.
Everything is, you know, is in a sham. So we cannot expect a president to just come and just flatter. In simplicity, speak about a wide corruption without giving us his strategy.
Crispin Kaheru, an anti-corruption activist, agrees. Kaheru says the president's speech should be backed by an unwavering political will to fight and end graft and mismanagement in the country.
His assertion of having proof of a corruption racket and his promise to crush it without granting amnesty, I think signals a very strong commitment. However, I want to note that while these words are promising, the Ugandan people demand just more than rhetoric. They want to see real action taken against the corrupt.
Experts have noted corruption contributes to the worsening of poverty and inequality in Uganda as citizens are deprived of essential services and infrastructure. The country loses at least 1 million Uganda shillings, or about $260 per hour, through corruption, according to Uganda's Inspectorate of Government. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Somalia has been elected as a non-permanent member of the UN Security Council for 2 years following a vote on Thursday in the General Assembly. Somalia will be joining two other African nations, Algeria and Sierra Leone, beginning in January 2025. Somalia's State Minister of Foreign Affairs, Ali Mohamed Omar, is part of the Somali team which traveled to the U.S. to witness the election. He spoke to VOA Somali Language Service reporter Haroon Maruf after the vote.
The UN Security Council is the highest body, international organization that decides and discusses the affairs of the world. And Somalia was a member of that body in 1971-72. So Somalia to come back and become a member of that institution is a testament that Somalia has made a progress in its state building, and the world has recognized that recovery. So it is very, very important. Somalia will contribute that body. Somalia has an experience in a failed state, in a fragile state, in a humanitarian crisis issues. So Somalia will contribute a different perspective in that body that has a highest consideration in international affairs.
How do you want to use this opportunity, this platform?
First, we would like to represent the entire world. We would like to represent the Africa, which is the continent that sent us to that body. And also, we would like to represent the countries that have either went through or is going through the difficulty we have been in the past 30 plus years. So we would like to raise the voices that are not raised in that body because of the lack of experience. So we would like to contribute our experience, especially in state building, in the humanitarian crisis issue, and also represent the vulnerable population that exists in the world.
Usually, the international community hears a lot of negative news about Somalia, fighting, clashes, political instability. What kind of message do you think this sends to the rest of the world?
Yeah, no doubt. Somalia went through a very challenging, a difficult period. But in the last 10 to 15 years, Somalia has made a huge American recovery. It's a bright spot, and this is a testament that the world has recognized that Somalia is now ready to come back to the international bodies and to his voice to be heard by the international community. So this is a great, great testament, and we Somalis are very, very happy that 178 countries has recognized Somalia to join this important body.
Ali Mohamed Omar is Somalia's State Minister for Foreign Affairs. He was speaking with reporter Harun Maruf of the U.S. Somali Language Service. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, June 7th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Malawi President Lazaro Chakwera has refused to sign into law a bill which allows the cultivation of local varieties of cannabis with high in THC content. The THC is a substance found in cannabis which makes people high. Last month, some religious groups complained in a letter to President Chakwera that Parliament had passed the law without proper consultation. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi Parliament passed the bill in March, saying the cultivation of the local variety of cannabis would help boost the country's economy. Lawmaker Peter Dimba moved the motion in Parliament to debate the bill. He told VOA Thursday that President Chakwera's action was expected.
You might be aware that even after passing the bill, we had some stakeholders, particularly the faith leaders, who voiced out their concerns regarding the bill. What they said was there was need for civic education and sensitization.
Dimba, who is also a chairperson for the Committee on Legal Affairs in Malawi Parliament, says the bill was allowed to pass because Parliament saw the benefits of the local variety of cannabis to the country's economy. He says the research has shown that Malawi would earn more than double the foreign exchange that it earns from tobacco, the country's main foreign exchange earner.
What we'll do is basically engage with the faith leaders, assure them that the bill is not really meant for smoking. It is basically meant for, you know, medicinal and industrial use. When we've talked to them, we'll be able to table the bill in Parliament again.
Dimba says after passing the bill, it will automatically become a law because according to the Malawi law, whenever Parliament passes the bill for the second time, it does not need the President to formally approve it. Anti-drug campaigner Nelson Zakeo is the executive director of the local NGO Drug Fight Malawi. He told VOA he wishes the bill would never go back to Parliament because the lawmakers failed to justify the benefits of cannabis when they approached them.
You know, we asked the other side that they should probably provide us with a best practice. A country in Africa where economically there's a growth because of cultivation of cannabis. Unfortunately, they failed to tell us.
Zakeo said instead of growing local cannabis, Malawi should put much effort in cultivating on large-scale crops like maize, cotton, tea, and soybeans, which he says are also in higher demand in the international market. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blantyre.
1 in 10 people worldwide fall ill each year from contaminated food. The World Health Organization says over 200 diseases are caused by eating contaminated food, with 40% of foodborne diseases affecting children under the age of 5. Maureen Ojiambo reports on World Food Safety Day.
World Food Safety Day is celebrated every year on June 7th to raise awareness and educate people about bad and contaminated food. According to the World Health Organization, food safety is a global concern as unsafe food can lead to foodborne diseases with severe health consequences. Maria Neira is the Director of Public Health, Environment and Social Determinants of Health Department at the World Health Organization. She says, everyone has a role to play to ensure the food is safe to eat.
Food safety has a direct impact on our health. Over 200 diseases are caused by eating contaminated food. Some are mild, but others can be deadly. We tend to think about food safety only when we get sick, and we should think more often because foodborne diseases are entirely preventable.
The WHO report indicates that in Africa, foodborne diseases are responsible for 137,000 deaths and 91 million acute illnesses each year. Many countries across the world are struggling with the burden of foodborne diseases. The incidents have often been underestimated due to underreporting and difficulty in establishing relationship between food contamination and illness or death.
Food safety standards protect everyone's lives. They are key to ensuring safety and quality. And that's why WHO, together with FAO, leads global experts groups and provides scientific advice to develop international food safety standards to protect consumers' health.
This year's theme is Food Safety, Prepare for the Unexpected, highlighting the need to be prepared for food safety incidents. Neira says, efforts are needed to prevent, detect, and manage foodborne risks.
Safe food allows the uptake of nutrients and promotes human development. Nobody should die from eating food. These are preventable deaths.
The WHO says foodborne diseases are infectious and toxic. They are caused by bacteria, viruses, parasites, or chemical substances entering the body through contaminated food. Chemical contamination can lead to acute poisoning or long-term diseases such as cancer, with many foodborne diseases leading to long-lasting disability and death. Xu Dongyu is the Director General of the Food and Agriculture Organization.
To stay healthy and productive, every person needed their food to be safe. And food safety is the responsibility of everyone along the entire value chain from the producer to the consumer. Over the past few years, we have been faced with unexpected and multiple threats which have affected food availability, food accessibility, and food affordability.
The World Health Organization says food safety campaigns are receiving minimal political attention, especially in developing countries. More than 600 million people fall ill and 420,000 die every year after eating contaminated food. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
Zimbabwe is facing long hours of power cuts due to its dilapidated infrastructure and the impact of recurring droughts on hydropower. To help the United Nations development program is installing solar panels on government-owned health facilities. Columbus Mavunga reports from Bulawayo.
Health centers in 15 countries have installed solar power through the United Nations Development Program's Solar for Health project. That includes more than 1,000 health centers in Zimbabwe, the largest program in the world, says UNDP resident representative in Zimbabwe, Aloya Dele Odusola.
If you put all the renewable energy capacity that we have generated in the country, is 13.03 megawatts, which account for 35% of all independent power production, the one that is not done by government, is huge as an individual entity.
Zimbabwe has for years been facing energy shortages. Long hours of power cuts affect even hospitals. Dr. Nasisi Janga is the chief medical officer at Impilo Central Hospital, one of the health institutions which have benefited from the Solar for Health project.
It would mean all the news that used to make the headlines in the newspapers that Impilo has no electricity for 2 days, 3 days, that should be a thing of the past. It's a real game changer.
Tandazani Chingila is happy his father's prostate cancer operation went through at Mpilo Central Hospital without a power shortage. He says they have saved a lot of lives who come here to the hospital. Now there is solar. It means Mpilo Hospital is now off-grid, which means Mpilo Hospital is now independent because of the solar, which is marvelous to us. Authorities hope the switch to solar energy is seamless at all health facilities in Zimbabwe installed with solar power and access is released to the national grid. Columbus Mavungam, VOA News, Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with athletics, where Ghana bounced back to dominate the finals of the 4th Confederation of African Athletics Region 2 Senior Athletics Championship men's 4x400 meters event held at the University of Ghana Sports Stadium. The contingent made up of Israel Anane Dome, Solomon Diafo, Peter Ante Adu, and Daniel Otibo duly delivered Ghana's first gold medal of the day with a time of 3 minutes 09.5. 5.3 seconds. Ghanaian fans breathed a high sigh of relief as the quartet came through to grab the top spot, leaving Ivory Coast and Benin, who limped to the finish line with disappointment. Despite the huge achievement, Ghana failed to secure a spot in the 2024 Paris Olympic Games scheduled for later this year. Ivory Coast and Benin finished second and third respectively, clocking 3 minutes 22.99 seconds and 3 minutes 27.93 seconds. Staying with athletics, Kenyan runner Ronex Kipruto has been stripped of his world record in men's 10-kilometer road race and banned for 6 years in the doping case. A disciplinary panel ruled that abnormalities in Kipruto's blood samples pointed to a deliberate and sophisticated doping regime, and Kipruto likely had help from unknown third parties. At the time, he was aiming to qualify for last summer's Olympics in Tokyo. The panel imposed a 6-year ban because of what it deemed the aggravating circumstances in the case, up from a standard 4-year doping ban. Kipruto was disqualified from all of his results since September 2018, meaning he loses a world championship bronze medal in the 10,000 meters from 2019 and his 10,000 road record from 2020. And on to football news, where Sudan and Libya secured vital wins while Guinea-Bissau settled for a goalless draw against Ethiopia in Thursday's 2026 World Cup qualifiers for Africa. The biggest result of the afternoon was in Group B, where coach Kwesi Appiah's Sudan claimed a convincing 2-0 victory over Mauritania in Nouakchott. The win propels Sudan to the top of Group B with 7 points, 3 more than second place Senegal. In Group A, Guinea-Bissau hosted Ethiopia at the Estadio 24 de Setembro in Bissau. The match ended in a 0-0 stalemate, leaving Guinea-Bissau in second place with 5 points. And World Football Governing Body FIFA has decided to lift one out of the 2 bans imposed on the Tanzania Premier League club's young Africans, popularly known as Yanga. Yanga has been handed an indefinite ban for breaching Article 3 of the FIFA transfer regulations. However, the player who caused the team to be imposed with a ban was not named. And that's it for this Friday's edition, Africa's Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, June 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV show, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.